My name is Israel Vega. With me on stage is Nathan Miller. We asked our children, we both have kids around the same age, and we asked, how do we explain claims to children? And they said, Nathan's daughter said, you should just address the audience like this. Goo goo gaga, pants pants. So this side is my side, and you guys are going to be the goo goo gaga side. And this side is Nathan's side, and you guys are the pants pants side. So when I point to you, I need a goo goo gaga or a pants pants. That sounded much better in my head. That sounded really good in my head. My son actually gave me a puppet, so I have a puppet. So in case demos fail, it will be a puppet show. All right. Here we go. Talking about claims. We tried to level set early on, try to let everybody know what we were going to be talking about. Nathan and I have been working with claims for about 2 years now, and we definitely have learned a lot over the 2 years. We learned that the more we work on these things, the less and less we know about some of these claims infrastructure things, and I'm sure some of you will probably feel the same way. We're going to provide a quick overview of federation. What is federation? What does it mean? And when I say quick, I mean we're going to go through it pretty quickly. And again, as I mentioned earlier, if something doesn't make sense, your neighbor probably doesn't understand it either, so go ahead and raise your hand, and I will clarify. I promise I will not call you out or force you to come on stage and present my talk. We will also make a bunch of assumptions. Now, I don't normally poll the audience and ask where they are as far as SharePoint and claims, but in general, who has not done anything that we've talked about in the assumptions? Who has not done any of those things? All right? A few folks? All right. Okay, so I'll spend a little bit of time, actually talking about those. But again, if there's something that doesn't make sense, go and raise your hand, and I will try to re-clarify. We're going to talk through some common scenarios. We talk to customers a lot, and all of them are trying to do some very similar things. Nathan and I put together some pretty common scenarios that we hear. If your scenario is not covered, it's probably going to be covered in bits and pieces. We'll definitely have time since we are the last session of the day. We can take time at the end and show you some additional scenarios, show you some additional functionality if we haven't shown it to you. So don't take it as these guys aren't going to talk about it. There are some common things that we hear. One of the big common thing that we hear is, I want to authenticate with ADFS. I want to authenticate with Active Directory and ADFS. But I still want my experience, my SharePoint experience, to work out. Another one is, how do I know when to migrate? And when I do migrate, what does that actually mean? How do I migrate from either it's a SharePoint 2007 site, or I migrate from an existing site and then move that over to SharePoint? And the last two there, we're just going to have some fun with claims. We built some custom claim providers integrating some custom claims within SharePoint. We'll show you how it integrates into SharePoint, how we get authentication from the outside in the public and private federation as well. And along the way, we are going to share some tips and tricks of things that we've learned throughout our experience building these things. So in general, what's the big deal, right? We hear about claims all the time. We hear about federated identity. That's great. Well, the big deal is that, one, security is complicated. As you're dealing with these things, I need to secure content. I want only people to have access to content that should have access, not people that should not have access. And then on the other side of the fence, identity and access is just messy, right? Dealing with forgotten passwords, dealing with user accounts and the user provisioning. And when you put these things together, like what we tend to see is, wow, there's a pattern that's really popping out there. And hey, look at that. SharePoint claims, right? SharePoint claims will help bridge some of this gap between the complicated security and some of the identity and access messiness. That didn't hit go over as well as I thought. It's a cool animation. All right. Here are some really must-haves when you're doing claims authentication. This is regardless of whether you're doing SharePoint or not. The first one there is, how will your users be authenticated? How do we actually perform that logon experience? Is it through Google or a Facebook or a Live ID? Is it through an Active Directory? How do they actually put in their credentials, and how are they going to actually authenticate? The second one there is, how will users be authorized? Once I let them into my site, how do I then turn around and perform some permissions on them so I only allow them read access or deny access, things like that? That third bullet there is, who will manage accounts and provisioning? How do actually end users get to my site? Who adds them? Who manages the forgotten passwords? This is really important, especially in a federated world, because you don't own the identity. You don't own the provisioning of that particular identity. That provisioning exists somewhere else. really important when you're looking at your claims planning, and we'll talk about how you integrate that into your site. The fourth one there is the identifier enough? Is the fact that they authenticated with a Facebook account enough? Is the fact that they've authenticated with an Active Directory account through our partner ADFS enough? Or do I need to know more information? Do I need to know, for example, how they authenticated, whether they authenticated with a smart card or a certificate? Do I also need to know when they did authenticate, what information that I get back from them after they've authenticated, not just where they were, but were they on the corporate network? Were they in a Starbucks? Were they potentially in a wireless access point? Fifth point there, are multiple identities allowed? So in the federated world, I have probably six different types of identities. And each one of those identities carries with them different things. Live ID is different from a Google ID, which is different from a Yahoo ID. There's a thing in the government space called identity assurance where they're trying to do things around different identities, and they mean different things. And the higher the identity assurance, the more I can trust that particular assertion of that identity. So, for example, a Facebook account might be an identity assurance of one, I'm sorry, of zero, where I don't really know. I can't validate the identity, but I know that that identity got vetted at some point. If I go down to like an identity assurance of three, they've not only authenticated with a secure access, but I know that that user that's actually presenting those credentials is on a secure laptop that I issued, is with a CAC card that I issued, so the assurance is a little bit higher. You really have to ask yourself some of those questions when you're looking at, again, some of these federated scenarios, because that might limit what somebody has access to. For SharePoint, number six is, do I really need a custom claim provider? We'll talk about what is a custom claim provider. We'll dig down into them, but as you're working on your planning and kind of thinking through these things, you really have to know what is it that I actually need, because you may not need one after we go through the talk. And the seventh one there, we're not going to cover specifically a custom STS or a custom security token service, but we hear a lot of, we read a lot of blog posts and we hear from a lot of customers, I just want to stand up a custom STS. Custom STS is a big deal, right? You've got to manage that. You've got to manage a lot of security. There's a token encryption, an XML signing, and there's a lot of things you have to worry about. But as you're looking through some of these claims things, do I really need one? You have to kind of ask yourself that question. When I'm looking at SharePoint, so adding to the ones that we just talked about, when I'm looking specifically at SharePoint, I really have to think about these fundamental things. The first one there is, if I don't have it at the time I presented my credentials, I can't turn around and add it. So I can't turn around and ask for additional information after I've logged in. That's the way it works by default. We can add additional information in the pipeline, and we'll show you how to do that. But in general, if I don't have it at the time I authenticated, I'm not going to have it to authorize on that particular thing. Second bullet there is know the difference between what I call incoming claims, or I'm sorry, in SharePoint, what is called incoming claims, and map claims. Here's what comes in from that IDP. Here's what I'm mapping internally. I could have 10 incoming, but I could only map three internally inside of SharePoint. So know the difference between what's coming through there, and we'll show you a little bit, a few examples of that. Third bullet there is that the user identity is determined by authentication method. NT Bob is NT Bob. Windows Claims Bob is Windows Claims Bob, and they're not the same by default. There are ways to tie them together and make them look like the same user, but in general, the way it works out of the box, if I log on with Live ID, I am a Live ID user. That makes sense? I'm spending a lot of time on these. I know you guys have been going through these, but I want to make sure that you kind of get this, because these are kind of the fundamentals with SharePoint. The last two there, really, public federation is not the same as private. Federating with a partner, I got a little more negotiation power with a partner than I do with, for example, a Google or a Facebook or a Live ID. I can't ask Live ID to give me a user's address if I haven't been provided permission to do that. But with a federated partner, I might be able to ask for that information through the negotiation process of the federation. The last one there is really important. I want to make sure that y'all understand. SharePoint claims, when it's looking at it, it's really a string comparison underneath the covers. And what it's looking for is an OR comparison. So I'm either a partner or a customer or NT Bob. And if I match one of those, then I will get access, whatever access has been provided to me. Another key point here is that most federation relationships are based on trust. I have to trust that the end user on the other side, whoever's managing that federation trust, guards his certificates, guards his secrets, guards the federation trust. And honestly, as with both relationships, most relationships that are based on trust, most of the times it's complicated when you're looking at these federated relationships. All right, so what do I get in SharePoint? What is a trusted token issuer? When I run that PowerShell, if you're not familiar with it, The way you set this up within SharePoint, you fire up a PowerShell UI, and you're going to run some PowerShell. And that PowerShell you're going to run is going to create what's called a new claim type mapping. I mentioned incoming and map claims. I'm going to get the incoming claims. I'm going to create a claim type mapping for myself, and I'm going to specify that in my security token issuer. So that's one of the things I get when I set up my trusted identity token issuer. The other thing I get is some login experience. After I set up my trusted identity, I get a login. I'm able to select that for my particular zone, and I'm also able to select that when I go to log in to present credentials at that particular IDP. What do I get with a custom claim provider? One of the first things I get with a custom claim provider is I get the ability to search and resolve users. In SharePoint, if I add a little red squiggly, I want to be able to resolve users. When you're looking at general federation, search and resolve is kind of a big deal. If you don't know and you don't have access to the other side of the fence, you can't query the other side, right? You can't query Facebook for all of its users that match out of the box. There are ways you can do that with customization, but really, once you set up a federated trust, you have to assume that the identity coming from the other side is a good identity. The other thing I get with claims providers, I get the ability to do claims augmentation, where I can add additional claims in the pipeline and use that for authorization time. How does this all fit together? I've got my login screen, and I've got my claim providers. Out of the box in SharePoint, it does ship with some claim providers, but as I add additional trusted identity token issuers, I may or may not have a claim provider that's associated with that, as is the case there for Azure ACS. We do not have a claim provider in this case. As I go through the pipeline and I go to authenticate, on the outside, when I'm done authenticating, I get a set of encoded claims. Those are the claims that are used within SharePoint to actually authorize things. And this is true for any federated environment. It's not specific to SharePoint in some sense. I'm going to authenticate, I'm going to get a set of claims, and I'm going to use those claims within my application. That's really what we're doing here. Within SharePoint, we're doing something a little special in that we're encoding them, and we'll show you what that means in a sec. The other thing I get is a people picker experience, and the way that this all kind of maps together is every one of these claim providers has an opportunity to resolve what the end user has typed in so that they have access to actually add a particular permission for a user. Now, in the case here, we've got our Azure ACS. You type in the letter T, and it goes in and resolves it. Because there is no claim provider, SharePoint assumes or doesn't assume that, hey, you must know what you're typing. You must know that that federated claim is the letter T. So it's just going to provide that for you. So you really don't get any real search and resolve out of the box unless you build a custom claim provider. Looking on the internet, if you see a lot of blog posts around ADFS, one of the big complaints is that, hey, I set up ADFS and I'm authenticating against Active Directory, but I don't get search and resolve. So how do I actually do that? And we'll talk about that again in a minute. Out of this, when I actually set a credential on a user, from a user, I pick a user, add it to an access, whether it's a site or a document, I get an encoded claim for the particular claim that I actually chose. When I'm looking at custom claim providers and looking at deploying them, I need to associate them with a zone. Now, a zone is a logical container within SharePoint that takes a URL and actually groups it to a set of authentication providers. In this case here, what we have to do is if we're deploying our custom claim provider and we're not associating it with a trusted identity token issuer, I need to associate that claim provider with that zone so that SharePoint knows when I'm doing something on this web app, I need to call out to this claim provider. So that's what you're doing here when you're associating that with PowerShell. A quick bit about claims encoding. It is farm specific. So when you're setting these things up, you have to make sure that you understand that all the different claims encodings that I have are specific to the farm. And the reason that is because I want to make sure that my farm understands that particular claim type with that particular issuer of that claim, and I want to mash those things together and make sure that that's unique within my farm. Custom claims encoding, so any additional claims that you add outside of the reserve claims, those get encoded starting at Unicode character number 500, which that's not the Enya character, it's like another funny character. But it starts at Unicode, so it basically takes the claim type, the issuer, mashes it down together into one particular Unicode character set, and then that's the one it uses to encode your claim. It is an immutable list, so once you set it up, you cannot recreate it. You can do things like remap them, but in general, once you map them, you can't unmap them in your farm. And the values are validated in lowercase. There are some IDPs that will issue claims in upper and lowercase. According to the specification may or may not depending on how you read it and depending on whether you're up at night reading specifications. This comes from the XML string specification that really doesn't have any guidance around lowercase and uppercase as far as the implementation. So this is actually like three specs deep. We're supposed to be evaluating things in mixed case, but some IDPs do not issue them. SharePoint also looks at them in lowercase. So make sure that you understand that when you're integrating it with other IDPs. Now, with these particular claims and codings, here we see that we have four different types. The first type there is the ANSI character 504, and that is the ENIA character. And what that one says is, I want to take that particular claim type, which is the authentication method, and it's issued by test ADFS, and I want to mash those together, and that's my claim type. That's my claim. My claim type is my authentication method. I misspoke. Second two there in the middle are reserve claim types. Those are ones that SharePoint issues out of the box. Those will always encode the same way from farm to farm. And we'll show you a quick blurb on that as well. The last one there is just another claim type. And here, when we mapped in the Windows account name, that one gave us a 507. So it is in the order that you create these different claim types. That's the order in which they get encoded inside of SharePoint. This was for reference. I'm not going to go through this in excruciating detail. But these are the out-of-the-box claim types that you can use for your application. This is the way that they encode. And know that when you're doing it in SharePoint, you're integrated with SharePoint, they will always encode the same way. So when you download the slide deck, you will have this in there. All right, before we jump into the scenario, any questions on claim types, claim type mapping, SharePoint overview? Yes, sir. Okay, so the question is, how do we then take our identities? Let's say we have the where they're accessing SharePoint and their NT Bob and Windows Bob. How do we then merge them together? One of the ways we can do that is through ADFS, where as they come in, I actually map them to a. I did this for a customer. We actually mapped them to a GUID, so they were a GUID to SharePoint, but to the outside world, they were both a Live ID and a Windows ID and an ID that authenticated with SiteMinder. And what we did on the back end is we just merged them together, ran some claims transformation, and then we did identity issuance assurance on there as well. So we said if you authenticate with SiteMinder, then it's higher. If you authenticate with Windows, it's higher. If you authenticate with Live, it's not as high. But to SharePoint, you were GUID, right? So that's how we kind of merged and mapped all the identities. There's other ways to do it as well. There's ways to do it not on the identity at all, and we have an example of that as well. All right. So the scenario here that we're going to cover is the ADFS Active Directory claim provider.
So the first scenario we're going to look at is on the ADFS claim provider. We've got ADF set up already. So we're going to assume that you've already gone through maybe blogs or you've already set up ADFS in a SharePoint environment. But what we will show you is how that actually works from a SharePoint standpoint. And then some of the strategies as far as federating additional ADFS providers to that. In the scenarios where maybe you've got an external partner, and how to best handle that if you've got multiple ADFS scenarios that we want to actually federate together. So the other things that we've got to do is, in this environment, we're also working across forests. So we've actually set up our people picker so that we can actually go across the forest. And then we've also got, we're going to do some deny claims to block access for some of the external users to some of the content on the site. So as far as the environment that we've got set up, we're going to do, first we're going to do ADFS and actually two ADFSs and federate those. Then we're going to actually do a custom claim provider to have that better user experience. We're leveraging Secure Store and our custom claim provider so that we can actually have a credentials that are actually querying our AD. We've got a couple SharePoint sites that we're actually accessing content on. Okay. Go ahead and switch it.
You will learn something before you leave. Hopefully, no one has caught nephrophobia, all the cloud talk that we've been talking about. That didn't go over well either. What is wrong with this crowd? Nephrophobia, fear of clouds. Yes.
Okay, so here's the ADFS environment that we've got set up. And I've got a partner ADFS already federated into this environment. So I want to show a couple things in here. We've got some rules in here. So first off, we're actually passing through email address, and maybe we're actually passing through some security groups so that they can manage some of their security groups. But we also want to set up some custom rules as well. So one of the things when you're federating with partners, it's a good idea that you might want to set up maybe a general user's role for them so that you can actually secure content based on their roles that they're coming in, regardless of whatever they send you. That way you can still do security by roles, and then and if you have other partners, you can actually secure them by roles as well. But the other thing that we were going to do is we're going to add another rule in here because we're going to put some deny claims on here. So I'm going to add a custom rule. And in this rule, I'm going to actually declare that anyone coming through on this ADFS will actually be a non-full-time employee. So we're going to create a non-FTE status. So whenever someone logs into the Fabricam domain, they come into our federation, we actually do a detection. If it's fabricam.com, then we actually put a non-FTE role, so a claim role in here. SharePoint can see that. We can actually secure it, or we can actually put web policy denies on any kind of content or web apps so that they can't get to those types of capabilities or those content. So as far as then on the SharePoint side, I'm actually federating to my portal, and I just pass through email address, and I also pass through the roles that we're sending through from our partners, as well as we're also coming in through our Contoso domain as well, so we can log into Contoso with this ADFS form as well. Okay, so I'm back over in my SharePoint environment, and I'm going to hit the portal. Actually, I'm going to hit it with in safety mode so you can kind of see the two. Okay, so we've got two ADFSs set up. So you've got the picker that by default that's showing up here. And so in the first example, I'll actually just log in with the Fabricam domain so you can kind of see that custom rule that I set up and how SharePoint sees that coming in. And then after we do that, we'll actually log in with the Contoso and actually show some of the people picker and how we can actually fix some of that experience. Okay, so I'm logging in with Brad Sutton. So this is actually going through, so it hit our SharePoint site, it got redirected to our ADFS, and then the ADFS got redirected into the Fabricam ADFS form as well. So this actually authenticated, actually is going back through the ADFS, and then it's actually getting redirected into the portal. And it's waking up. It's the rainy weather that's causing it. Okay, so now you see that I came through. I'm actually logged in now as Brad S. from Fabricam. And then just to kind of show you that claims page, you'll see on here that I've actually got these claim roles coming in. And I have a claims augmentation where I'm actually in ADFS. I'm appending Fabricam dot to all the AD groups that they're sending over for me. And then I'm also, see in there. And then I'm also actually, you see that non-FTE status that's up there as well. So the claim that the custom rule that I put in ADFS, I actually put that in there as well. And then I've got my Fabricam users. Okay, so but the problem with ADFS is when you actually do people picker, it always resolves to true, something that Israel was talking about earlier. So I'm going to log back in with someone from the Contoso domain and kind of walk through some of the scenarios of how we can actually fix that experience. Oops, that is not her password. Okay, so now I'm logged in with Karen, and she's in our Contoso domain, and we'll actually just kind of walk through the people picker experience. So I'm going to go in, I'm going to grant permissions, I'm going to go to my search, and you'll see on there that I've got my ADFS server set up, and I've got my email address, and I got my role. So it's not necessarily a great experience. People are going to go, well, what's role? How do I get that set up? The email address, maybe I want to do it by something else. And then the other problem that I've got is if I just type in anything, it's always going to resolve to true. So ADFS will always just resolve to true. So we want to kind of fix that experience. So what we needed to do to fix that is we needed to actually create a custom claim provider. So this is kind of the first scenario that, people tend to get into is, okay, I've already got AD set up, I've got, but I need to actually leverage ADFS, but I need to have the search and the people picker work well for my end users. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to actually enable my custom claim provider, and I'll walk you through that. So this actually asked for a password because we're setting up a secure store that we could leverage for, querying our, Active Directory. So what this custom claim provider does, what that script does, is it enables a custom claim provider. It also adds a couple roles. So we added that deny rules. So I had that, that roles claim of the non-FTE status. So if there's a non-FTE status, we're actually going to lock down some of the web apps that we've got. So we create some deny rules on there. Then the other thing that we do with this is enable the claim provider for the site that we're wanting to, the zone that we're wanting to set it on. This is actually just setting up the secure store app here, so I'll kind of skip through that. We have to set up the, in this case, we have to set up the people picker, the forest for that. Because we're actually querying multiple forests in this environment. So we have to actually set up the STS command for the people picker status. And then we have to add those deny rules as well to our web app policies. Okay, so that has enabled the provider. So now when I go in here and I go to grant permissions, I've actually got a custom AD store claims provider. And so now when I actually type in Karen, it actually resolves based on her Active Directory claim or Active Directory name. And we can also do, we could also resolve by groups as well. So if I've got security groups, we could do users, we could do AD groups as well, and resolve that way as well. Let me actually get back.
So the question is, what is ADFS actually doing? In the scenario where we talked about with the claim provider, if you saw the slides earlier, SharePoint just calls into a claim provider, and it's basically calling into an empty claim provider. It doesn't exist. So what it does is it just says, oh, you're typing this in? Well, based on my incoming claims, I know that you're accepting email address. I also know that you're accepting role. So I'm going to resolve whatever you typed in to one of those things, because it may or may not be an email address, may or may not be a role. If we had mapped in maybe five or more different claim types, every one of those would have shown up, because SharePoint, in our case, without a custom claim provider, has no idea what you're asking for. When you do ask for an email address, if let's say that you were to type in, you know, Daffy Duck, you hit the button, you were to type in email address equals Daffy Duck, that claim will never get evaluated because it'll never resolve, right? A user will never come in with an email address of Daffy Duck. But if they would, then they'd be able to get access.
So one other thing we could do with SharePoint, and I didn't do it in this environment, but I wanted to point it out to make sure everyone is aware, is there's this ADFS still in there. But what we can do is with ADFS as the trusted issuer in this case, and we've got our custom claim provider, we can actually bind those together. So if I'm actually got the trusted issuer that I'm using for authentication, I could also use my custom claim provider to do any kind of querying on the system for how we resolve those claims. The reason why I didn't do that in this case is once you bind them together, you can't unbind them. So if you actually bind this custom claim provider to your trusted issuer, there's no way to unbind that. You would have to actually re-enable your trusted claim or your trusted issuer in the environment. So I just want to make everyone aware of that. So the code that we've got for doing the custom claim provider. Let's see if I could scroll this in. So we've got to implement an SP claim provider. So in this case, just kind of want to hit some of the methods that we've got for resolving this, and then we'll kind of jump into some of the other claims that we can do with different providers. But so the first thing that you'll want to do is with this custom claim provider is implement the fill resolve, the fill claims for entity. And so one of the things that we can do with the fill claims for entity, this is really the one method that gets executed in the WCF context. So you're still in the SharePoint STS at this point. You're not in a web context. But one thing that we can do is if you don't have claims mapped through SharePoint, so say, for example, I had an email address and I had roles, but maybe I didn't map roles in my SharePoint environment, but I knew they were coming in because I'm sending them through ADFS. Well, if I implement a custom claim provider, you can actually grab the requested message and grab any claims off of that message that's being mapped in without it having to be mapped through SharePoint. So one thing to be aware of, so if you've got multiple claims coming in, you can actually inspect that on the message itself, and then you can actually map the incoming claims and add those back into your environment so you can actually do some additional things with that. But you'd have to do that through a custom claim provider. So in this case, I'm actually reissuing any of the incoming claims as provider claims on this environment here. And that's really the only thing that method is doing in this case. So the other thing that we do is fill search. Fill search is when we actually pick up the people picker. So when we actually do that wildcard search, this is how does that actually query? So what we have to do is basically say, you know, what methods are we actually querying for? And if we're not querying for anything that's valid, we'd actually just return nothing in this case for this provider. But in this case, what we're doing is looking at whether we're querying for users or querying for security groups. And then we issue the search on that, and then we determine are the results users or query groups. So just kind of drill into here. On get results, you'll see that we're actually doing a search for we call an SP utility search Windows principles, where we can actually just grab the Windows principles that match that keywords that we've got, and then we can actually return those as users or as security groups. And then once we've actually returned that list of results, the next thing we need to do is actually create the people pickers entities for each of those. Sorry. So here we've got where we're creating a user entity. So this really says, okay, what are we going to display whenever the user's being displayed on search or on resolve? And then what are the different properties that we want to set? And in this case, we're actually setting some additional entity data properties as well because they're being used in different types of views on the permissions. So in this case, we're actually setting quite a few of them because they're actually being used. And we've actually got notations on where each of these properties are being used in different views in SharePoint.
Any questions on that before we move on to the next one? Custom claim provider, AD, ADFS. Yes. So in particular, so the question is, why don't we just have it built in? It's a good question. One of the main reasons is because when you flip over your web application to SAML, which is within SharePoint, you're either in web Windows claims mode or you're in SAML mode. It's a good segue to my next section here. When you're in SAML mode, we have no idea what you're federating with, right? We don't know if you're setting up an ADFS provider. We don't know if you're setting up ping identity, whether you're federating with SiteMinder or you're federating with Azure ACS. So from a SharePoint point of view, there's no way for us to know what's on the other side of that federation. So that's one of the reasons why they just don't, you know, there's no way for them to do it. I think we
So I've got a blog that we'll probably put at the end, but it's intdev on MSDN blogs, and so I've got all the providers on there, and I'll link this one. I'll put the latest on this out there so you can download it and have it.
Thanks.
No problem.
Yep. Can it be made to work with 2007? Not sure. You have to catch me afterwards, and then we'll talk about it. I think there's scenarios where it can. But I'm not too sure. So let's pick up on your scenario afterwards. All right. So now that I've migrated over to SAML, now that I have my ADFS claim provider that Nathan has given me, Now I need to migrate, right? I've got my existing ACLs that are in the Windows domain credential format, domain slash username, and I need to migrate them over. Or I might have an existing 2007 site where I got to migrate. So what we put together was a very quick chart that helps you understand the from and to and what you have to do for each one of those. Smiley face means to support it out of the box, and we'll talk through those PowerShell commands and the APIs as well. The little middle face is something where you have to implement a custom, what's called an iMigrate user callback. And I've got some code snippets, and we'll walk through that iMigrate user callback to show you what it does. The sad face means don't try. And if you do, do not call me. Today, we're going to talk about, again, those three, right? We're going to talk about going from SAML to Windows claims. We'll also talk about going from Classic to Windows claims. And we'll talk about going from Classic to SAML claims. We'll talk through each one of those iMigrate user callback scenarios. Pause for dramatic effect. Yes, sir. Oh, so from and to Windows claims. So in 2007, Windows claims didn't exist, so it's a sad face. Yeah, it would have ruined my chart. He's paying attention. Awesome. There will be a quiz. How do we migrate from Classic to Windows claims? Note on this PowerShell, we'll walk through some of the things, but the thing to note on the bottom is the little things in the purple box, that's the only thing that's going to change when you go from SAML to Windows claims. So keep a mental note of the things on top of the whatever's not in the box. As we go through these, the first thing we have to do is we have to get our web application within PowerShell, and we want to create an admin claim for yourself. You want to make sure that after you migrate the application that you have rights to that application. So you've got to create a Windows claim for yourself when you're migrating over from Classic to Windows claims, and that has to be in the Windows claim format, the I:0W pipe and then domain name and user. The next section there is going to be what I call just let me in after migration. Really, what you're doing is you're saying create a Windows claim and add it to the web app policy so that I can get in after the application is migrated because all the principles will be different. So that's what you're doing here in the migration. You're going from one principle to another principle type. And then the last note there is you're actually going to do the migration. That's pretty much all there is to it. You're going to run that migrate user and pass it a true parameter, which just says go from Classic to Windows claims, and it's going to run a migration. Behind the scenes, it's going to go to the content database, update all the principles, update all the domain slash usernames, and update everything that's within SharePoint. And then when you're done, you're going to get a nice, fresh content database that has your Windows claims credentials all mapped over. When you're doing custom migration, though, there are some things that you have to consider. I've got to consider downtime. I've got to consider when do I do this if I have large data sets. What actually do I do? So the recipe that we put together for that, it's not really a best practice, more of a recipe, things that you can use in your environment. First thing here is we're just going to set up a Classic web application, and I'm going to create a temporary web app, and I'll show you in a second what that's for. I'm going to copy over or create a copy of my content database. I'm going to move it over. Then I'm going to mount it to what I'm calling my dummy web app. That dummy web app has to have everything set up. It doesn't need to authenticate any users. All it needs is the trusted provider associated with it so that when it does the migration, it knows how to actually do the migration. And it also has all the solutions so that when I mount it, it doesn't start complaining. But again, nobody will authenticate to this web application. We're just using it as kind of a pivot point while the migration is going on. In my Classic web app in our scenario, what we're probably going to do is set our Classic to read-only mode. That way our end users should still have access to their content while I'm doing this migration. After I migrate, I'm going to run my migrate user callback. I'm going to run it many times for every user is the way it works. When I'm done migrating, I'm going to have my fresh content database that's migrated. I'm going to take that. I'm going to copy it over to my newly created permanent web application, and I'm going to mount it there. So that's kind of the recipe that we used at a few customers, and they've had some pretty good success with migrating in this way, and we share with you. So here we go, migrating from Classic to SAML claims. Again, everything up above is the same. The only thing that's different is the stuff in the pink box, or in the purple box. And here what we're going to specify in this case is after Service Pack 1 of SharePoint, they introduce an interface called the iMigrate User Callback. And what that allowed you to do is during migration, pass in a reference to a class, and we'll show you what that class looks like. pass a reference to that class. That way, every time you're migrating, you can go ahead and evaluate a user account. So to migrate accounts, what we're doing is we're inspecting that incoming user account, and we're doing this for every user that goes through. Now, you can build customizations on top of this, so you can do eventing, you can do logging, you can do anything fancy that you want, but really the structure of it is look at a user account, figure out what the old user account is, and in your custom migrate code, you're going to know what the target is, so you're just going to go from this to something else, and then you're going to write some code to actually do the migration and put it in the correct format. The helper functions there are things that are not out of the box. These are things that we just added for you to take back. It's a good thing to have those helper functions. It helps you with debugging, and it also helps you when you're building out to isolate some of your claims migration. Purposely, we didn't put any actual migration because we don't know where you're going to, right? We don't know what trusted provider you're going to, but this kind of helps as a stub that you can use as you're migrating user accounts. Let's dig into one of those helper functions real quick. When I'm migrating from Classic to SAML here, in this case, I'm evaluating a Classic to Claims account. And there are certain SIDs and certain user accounts that you just do not want to migrate. One of them is local system. As it's coming over for 2007, think about the content database. I have a bunch of SIDs in there. One of those SIDs happens to be a local system account. I don't want to migrate that. Another one will be like NT authority / authenticated users. I may not want to migrate that because there is no claims equivalent to that out of the box. You can add a claim that equals the authenticated user claim. That comes from another claim provider, and the format is a little bit different. It's the C colon open paren users, so that's that claim provider one. But in this case here, we don't want to migrate those. If you do migrate those, you will find yourself in a world of hurt. Don't say I didn't warn you. If it is a group, we might want to do some things that are interesting around groups. We had a recent customer where they were trying to figure out whether we use group names or group SIDs. And the thing with group names is that it's really good because it's really friendly for the end users. But the problem with group names, as Nathan showed earlier, what if the group names come from a federated identity source and those group names get passed to us and I issue a claim called role equals administrator? That person's administrator is not the same as my administrator, but when it put those things together, role equals administrator, that's the way it's evaluated. So what Nathan did in his example is he actually appended any roles, any groups that came from the other side with the place that they came from, which was Fabricam. But in our case here, what we're saying is you have to decide, right? As you're planning your migration, you have to decide what you want to do with those group names and SIDs, and you have to know what you want to do in that. You'll implement your code there. When you're migrating back from Windows Claims to SAML, this is not one of those, you know, truly supported scenarios where it is possible to do, but it's kind of frowned upon going backwards from Windows Claims, it's more of an upcast for the .NET developers in the room, from Windows Claims to SAML Claims. But if you were to do that, here's kind of how you would do it. You'd go through and you'd evaluate the incoming claim, the Windows claim. You'd look at the type of claim that it is, and then you'd migrate, you'd issue the equivalent on the SAML side, whatever your SAML trusted provider is. So that's what you would do for migrating from Windows Claims to SAML Claims. Some notes. Again, the SAML account should not be migrated. The last one there is you must reconfigure the portal super user accounts to do search for Windows Claims. And I'll show an example of how to do that. And in some cases, you must log on as portal super users at least one time, especially if you're doing things like read-only content databases and things like that. So you have to at least log on at least one time to warm up that portal cache. If you see these errors in your event log, it's not good to ignore them. They've been there since 2007, but they're not very relevant in 2007. In 2010, they're a little bit more relevant. What this means, underneath the covers, SharePoint will try to build up a cache account, but it needs a user account to actually do that. It needs a user context. That cache account is the portal super user and the portal super reader. If you get these events in your log, here's how you fix that. What you do is you create the principal as a Windows claim and then set those on your web application as your web app policies, and that error will go away. So that's something you do have to do. Very important for SharePoint 2010 team sites with the publishing feature enabled, team sites with the wiki homepage feature, or just publishing sites. For the other site types, not really relevant, but if you do implement any of those publishing features, you will run into this problem. We include the PowerShell there, so you can go through and grab this PowerShell and actually use this. There's a lot of examples as well on the web, so this is just another example that you can use. All right, now we're going to have some fun with claims.
Oh, what about the reindeers? Reindeers like bananas.
Reindeers like bananas.
So,
no one cares. No one cares.
These are real facts. We found them on the internet.
We did find them on the internet, and they're real. Puppet show.
Okay. Oh. So, in the first scenario that we're going to look at is in this demo, last time we used ADFS, and we used a custom claim provider on top of ADFS to fix things. But it's also a scenario where you can actually just use Windows. So Windows AD, but maybe I want to secure things differently, leveraging a database or some other type of attribute. And a lot of my customers are actually asking for attribute level security. So I've got users, I want to secure by department, or I want to secure by company, or contract, non-contract employees. So I thought, well, how can we actually go about and do that? What's a good way to do that? And so in this case, what we're going to do is we're going to go through the search, we're going to go through the resolve, and we're going to do claims augmentation with Windows claims, but we're actually going to do a custom claim provider to do additional attribute level security on stuff. Okay, so I call this the profile claim provider. So it's actually querying, it's actually the directory store syncs to the profile service database, and I'm actually querying the profile service database to actually use some security on some of the attribute claims. The other thing that I'm doing is we're also leveraging in some of the scenarios a configuration manager for it as well. So I've got a web page where I can actually configure the types of claims that I want to secure by. So, go ahead.
Oh, they like the cow. Yeah. No penguins, no reindeer, cows.
We had a few before we came up with that one.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm in the environment again. I'm actually going to show you kind of what the provider looks like. And so in this case, I've got my profile claim provider, and I could do a search on company. So I could say Contoso, and I find my company. Of course, I find it in Active Directory. I also find it in my my company claim provider. But I can also do cancel that. Let me go back in. If I want to just do search for all of them. I could actually see all my companies in here. So my claim provider, based on how I want to search it, I can say, hey, if they didn't put anything in there, I'm going to grab them all. Probably don't want to do that in a production environment, but you maybe want to have three characters or four characters that you're actually wildcarding on. But in this case, I don't remember the companies I use, so I can actually search them all in this case. But what's nice about this is when customers were talking to me about, well, how can we actually secure by different types of attributes? So I thought, well, it would be kind of cool if I can actually have a manager to actually manage claims. So in this case, what I'm going to do is, and of course, you wouldn't want to put things in there that users can change, obviously. So we would have this to be only administrator can actually set some of these values. But in this case, what I'm going to do is I'll say, let's add department. I also have some BCS connections. So for example, if I was grabbing from an HR database, like employee group level, employee level, and maybe employee type, where we've got managers and contractors. So now we've got quite a few claims that we're actually configuring. So now I'm going to go back into my people picker. So now I'm going to secure by content, grant permissions. And you'll see now everything that I've actually configured comes up in my people picker. So I didn't have to configure anything. I didn't have to code anything. It's all dynamically generated through my custom claim provider. And so now if I actually do a search on everything, then I can see that there's 17 departments I can secure by. There's three employee levels or groups, three levels, and then employee types. So if I want to say, well, let's add contractors as members to the, I could do that. So we'll say okay. And then just to kind of show you what that looks like on the encoding, is I can actually have then a contractor in here where the value's at. And my custom claim provider is actually resolving all that. So I had to do some things a little differently in this case. So one, they're going to be Windows IDs that we're actually just augmenting the claims on these Windows IDs. But when we talked about kind of the filling for the entities, fill claims for entity, I had to go look up what entities you belong to. So what we had to do is look to see what was configured in the for the provider, and then go look those up for the given user. So in this case, what I'm doing is I actually go out there, I get the user properties that are configured, and then I go read those user properties from the profiles for that particular user that logs in. So in this environment, if I actually go in here and then log in, I'm going to switch users. I am switching to Karen B. I'll just kind of show you what those, Karen doesn't have access. Let's log in with Brad. Brad, not to be confused with the Brad from Fabricam. Okay, so when I go to the homepage and look at kind of the claims that he got filled for, you'll notice that my provider then wrote out all the claims for each type of claim that I configured. So in this case, I have the department claim, the company claim, the employee type, the group, and the level. I fill it all for him, and then I actually have the values for that. So any place after the initial login, anywhere where I've got documents secured by any of those properties, he would have access to those areas. Oh, so just to kind of, we're going to kind of blow through one more type of configuration that we can use. And in this case, we're actually going to use Azure ACS. If those of you that aren't familiar with Azure ACS, it's actually very similar to ADFS, but it's in the cloud. So it's definitely a worthwhile thing to look at when you're federating with external folks as far as public identities or also with other ADFSs from other organizations. So in this case, what we're looking at is we set up another configuration where if you've got maybe a marketing department that has an extranet site and they want to share with other people, but you want to have that actually be more of a self-service sharing. So I can actually post up a page or post up a document and actually share that based on an email address. And I can trust Azure ACS and have those people that have that email address log into the environment and access the documents that I share with them.
All right, so the architecture between that, because we're going to show you some abstract concepts here. When you dig into the claim provider, it's going to look a little bit different, but this is actually what we're doing behind the scenes. The scenario, again, is the marketing department. I've got a bunch of users on one side of the fence. They've got a bunch of documents that they want to share, but they want to share them externally with people who may or may not have access to SharePoint because they're just completely external, right? They log in with Facebook, Google, or PayPal in some cases. What we're going to do here is we're going to create what's called a temporary sharing token, and this is a concept we created. And so it's basically a token that you're going to get saved with, and that token is going to be associated with that particular set of documents or document that you're sharing. That document then, that sharing token can then get emailed out to the end users with an email email. They click on the document, and they have access to the information, but once the information is pretty much over or the collaboration is done or I've already set the time bomb on that particular piece of information, what I want to do is expire that token so that the next time in, they don't have access to get to the documents. We want to temporarily share it for a brief period of time. So that's what's going on behind the scenes, and that's the custom claims thing that we're going to show you. And again, the users on the other side are not users that are in our SharePoint environment. They're not users that are in SharePoint. These are federated users that are out in the cloud. So keep that in mind as Nathan walks through the demo. Okay, the recipe for that, we're gonna have a custom claim provider. We do have what we call a custom claim generator, which is just a chunk of code with a database, and we'll show you kind of the details of what we do there. We do have a custom ribbon extension, and that custom ribbon extension just goes and pops up a dialog box. Nathan will show you that. This is really specific for marketing departments or contractors who want to temporarily share information. Man, tough crowd.
All right, so in this environment, what I'm going to do is I'm logged in as an internal user, an AD user. I've got Brad logged in here. I'm going to upload a file, and then we actually have a custom ribbon control in here. We've got a couple of custom web parts as well. But in this case, what I'm going to do is upload the file. I'm going to share this out with actually one of my email addresses. I'll log in with my Facebook account then and be able to retrieve those files. So the external IDs that we're leveraging don't have access to anything in SharePoint other than one team site. But the team site that we have access to doesn't have any documents in it. So it really is just kind of a portal area where they can have their custom web part that they can actually click and get access to any of their documents that we share out with them. So in this case, I'm going to go ahead and I'll add a document. We'll go up to downloads. Okay, now that I've added up, I've got a custom ribbon control that we've got, so temporary share this document. So I'll go ahead and share it, and then I'll share it with myself. And this is actually how I'm registered on Facebook. So what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to leverage my Facebook account, federate with Azure, and then actually log in and grab the document. And then what we can do is if we've got multiple documents, we'd have the multiple documents on here. We could actually put comments so they could actually email the person out and let them know that we shared this document with them. And then we want to share it for a certain amount of time. Because the token that we've got in this case, we're not just sharing with an email address. So we're not giving permission to that email address. We're actually giving that permission to a hash of the email address and then the amount of time as well as the person that I am. And so when they're logging in, they build that hash based on who they are, time frame, and then we can actually validate what documents they have access to. So we'll do it shared for 5 days. We'll go ahead and share that. Documents are shared. Close that. Okay, so what ends up happening is I shared the document, changed the permission, added my claims hash on there, and now my end user would get the email address. They can actually log in now and grab that file from that environment. So what I got for the environment is I have a extended zone, so same farm, but extended zone on there. And I will go into our external version of it. And so we see in here, this is using Azure ACS. So if you guys haven't looked at that, we can certainly look at that later. But assuming that you have, this is what you end up getting if you check on which types of providers that you want to leverage. So in this case, I could do Yahoo, Google, and Facebook. Those are all the providers that are out of the box that actually leverage that you can send email address as a claim type in there. Live ID is in there as well, but Live ID that's federated in there doesn't send email address. It actually sends a Live ID where you'd have to do a registration process to get the email address. The other thing that you'll see in here is I also have submit sign in with your email address. If you did that, that's actually leveraging whenever you federate Azure ACS to an ADFS on-prem. So I have another ADFS on-prem that I federate with. You get that. So whenever you put your email address in, that's what it uses for Home Realm to direct you to the right ADFS to let you log in. Okay, so in this case, I'm actually going to leverage my Facebook account. So once you hit Facebook, it actually goes through Azure, redirects you to the Facebook. And then I log in. And logs in, it actually redirects me back. Now I actually log in, leverage my Facebook account. You'll see it up there, nathanmiller.microsoft.com. I'm actually in an external share site. So these files actually don't exist in the site. They actually just exist in the other sites, and we've granted permission to it. And then you'll see this is the new document that I shared. So I've got this one, and you see I've got an expiration date of when that document will expire on there as well. So when I click it, then I actually get the download for that document. So the users just see this one interface, the My Shared Documents, but they're able to actually then download any of those documents shared from any other sites that we've got in this extranet site collection. It is. So we've got two. We've got a sponsor web part, so I've got all the documents that I've shared, and then we've got where they can easily go out and unshare them, so they can see all the documents that they're sharing out and unshare them. And then we have another custom web part that's for the end user, which is what are the documents that they've got shared out with you. Yeah, so what it ends up doing is it actually, the permissions are.
Sorry, yeah. So the question is, for the custom web part, what actually is it doing? How does it go out to find the stub documents? And basically what we do is we reach out, because we change the permissions, the actual permissions on the document, actually can you show the claims page?
Yep.
Within our custom claim provider, as you come through the site, we look you up in a database and we say, hey, have any documents been shared with you? And if they have been shared with you, we turn around, go to the database, and issue this custom token. And again, that custom token is just a hash of some pieces of information that is specific to the sharing instance, if you will. So then we issue you these claims. That's the actual ACL that's on the document. Actually, mm-hmm. can you show the doc? So then what we're doing is behind the scenes, we just use SharePoint Security to manage that, because if you don't have access to the document, you won't be able to see that coming back. Yeah, it's just presenting a list of documents. Says, yep. Go to the SharePoint site, go get me all the documents that you have access to see, and it pulls those up and then shows them on the page. Yep. Oh, so if the link expires, so...
If the link expires, when you log in, the provider actually says, oh, these are expired tokens, I'm not going to give them to you anymore. So it doesn't matter if the token's on the document or not, the user won't have them, so they still can't access the document.
So the question is, how would we integrate with ADRMS to actually expire the physical document? That's a good point. We could potentially add some additional, RMS on top of that. But then we'd have to worry about things like cross-platform and things like that. So in our scenario here, all we're just showing is I've got a document that we're working on. I want to temporarily share it with you. But I don't want to have to manage that site anymore, right? I want to be able to just take it down and not give you permissions anymore.
That's exactly right. So and that's kind of the nice part about it is because we changed the actual ACLs and gave them the hashtag on the ACL that matches theirs. If the end user just emailed them the link to that document, it would still work because it would actually be able to access that document based on they've got the permission because they've got that. But once they expire, it's done, right? So they won't get the permission because it's during login.
And I didn't have to add that user to SharePoint in this case, right? That user is completely external. You could add it to a bunch of other federations. So just this is kind of showing the power of some of these things. Actually, can we show the ACLs on the document?
Yeah, let's see.
Yeah. You can't show it there. You
gotta... I might need to switch users, yeah. See, because my user doesn't have access to the site, so he's not able to get to anything other than the link to that document. So I'm going to log back in as the admin just so you can kind of see the site itself or the ACLs on the document.
So the question is, every time it tries to read a document, does it compare it to the claims? And since the ACL is on the claim, what it does is it says, oh, here's this document. I've got the ACL, right, the claim that you're supposed to have. It looks at the claims that were issued to you and then does the verification on that. So if you haven't been issued that claim, you don't have access to that document.
Manage permissions. So you see, there's the ones where we've broken and actually put our claims tokens on it.
So that's just kind of showing the power of claims and the power of things that you can do within claims and secure things, public federation, private federation, and this is public federation in this case. So the question is, how do these permissions get cleaned up? So there's actually a talk right after this one where we talk about that. I'm kidding. That's something where you could run through. Because the ACLs are stored in the database, if you were to deploy this in production, because they're stored in the database, we know, because we store the information of when it actually expires, we know when that token should get cleaned up. So you could potentially write a timer job or something in the background to go clean up those expired tokens and rip them off the document.
You would basically need to clean them off the document, and then you would also want to remove the limited access to the site as well. Because when you break the inheritance and add it to the document, it adds limited access to the site. As soon as one of those expires, then you would have a timer job that would actually go clean those off and remove mm-hmm. those claims.
All right. So when you're building claim providers, they are good for search and resolve, but they're also good for identity. Nathan mentioned that you can tie it to a trust identity token issuer so that when you authenticate a certain way, I want to augment with some additional claims. But by default, I could also do just claim providers or just trust identity token issuers. They don't necessarily have to get tied together. Heads up, all claim providers do fire whenever you're logging on. So keep that in mind as you're building your custom claim providers. There's something called should I resolve this claim? So when you're looking at your environment, if five people are trying to resolve a group claim, that's going to be a problem. So when you're looking at adding all these claim providers to your site, You want to make sure that those claim providers aren't stomping on each other. Make sure that they're validating only their own claims and they're only issuing their own claims. They're not turning around and trying to issue someone else's claim, because what that'll do is it'll break the experience and your search and resolve will be wrong. So keep that in mind. Claims are immutable, so they cannot be changed once they're issued. If I issue you a temp share token, and the example that we just showed you, I can't turn around through code and modify that, because I have that in my session, in my token, and the only way I can change that is if I actually log out, log back in again. Keep that in mind. Incoming claims, we talked about that. Nathan showed you kind of a cool way of getting around that, where if you don't have all the incoming claims, I can turn around and reach into the context that I'm running in and reissue all the incoming claims, whether I've mapped them or not, and then do that within a custom claim provider. So there's a note there to a blog post article. If you're building custom claim providers and you're working with SharePoint and claims, Steve Peschka is a good guy to keep reference of. Make sure that you reference his blog. All right, some more hints there. We talked about encoding. We talked about lowercasing. Responsible, not responsible. I just mentioned that as well. For deployment, obviously, quick thing on debugging. Debugging, the best way to do that is to deploy your custom claim provider and just attach to the process. Doing the F5 debugging with a claim provider, because of where it gets set up and the context and IIS and those type of things, it gets very tricky to debug that. So IIS resets and attaching to the process is kind of your best bet. For deployment, you also have to know that claim providers have to go everywhere in your farm. So if you're depending on them for issuing claims and validating claims, you do have to create two separate packages for them, one for your web app, which deploys just the binary, and you also have to deploy one for your app servers that actually deploys the claim provider and registers it within SharePoint. So keep that in mind. Some of this stuff, hopefully it doesn't go over your head, but it'll be something where you keep it in mind that, oh, I heard a talk where I had to do that. And yes, there was, so there's two different things you have to do there, two separate WSPs. Kind of way to do that. So in review, we have about 10 minutes left. We had some fun with claims. We showed some different claim providers. We showed some different ways to actually integrate claims, public federation, private federation. We showed you the ADFS claim provider as well. And we shared some general tips and tricks and some knowledge. I mean, you guys learned about cows and penguins and reindeer. and the Google Gaga pants, right?
Yeah, and the solutions are documented. And there's a video on each one that's on my blog. It's on the MSDN blogs, intdev, E-N-T-D-E-V. And I'll put the links to the code, too, as well, so you can get that as well if you want it.
All right, there's some related content. Most of the stuff has already passed, but you can look at it from the recordings. If you want to find us later, we'll be at the attendee party. We're also going to be presenting this talk again at Tech Ed Europe, so if you do go, come by and say hi. If you give us a good eval, come by again and give us a good eval at Tech Ed Europe. Thank you so much for coming. Have a great weekend and have a great party. Thank you.